We are now recording.
Okay, I'm going to call this session to order. This is the Board of Technical Registration, May 24th, 2022. Kurt, can you do a roll call, please?
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Mr. Hack?
Here.
Ms. Hopig?
Here.
Mr. Kolenka?
Here.
Ms. Lindgren? Mr. Nesgood?
Here.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Ms. Genke? Mr. Wilson? Mr. Wilson? Again, we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, this is our time for the call of the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431-01H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take action, legal action, on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, board members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Anyone wanting to address the board on a public issue? Okay, I don't see anybody out there. Any call-ins for a public?
Yes, this is Dan Goss.
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little louder? Oh, Dan Goss,
yeah. My name is Dan Goss.
You're on your agenda item, so this is just a call to the public.
Oh, got it. Thank you.
Okay, I don't think we have anybody wanting to share any public concerns. Let's move on to our consent agenda. Julie.
Okay. All of the licensing items are under the consent agenda, so.
Members of the board, anybody want to pull any of these items off for discussion? Kurt, is there an issue? Are you just working on Scott's?
I'm working on Scott's. Yes, I apologize.
There you go, Scott. Okay, so far I don't see anybody wanting to pull any of these applications for registration off the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, can we then do one motion that would approve the entire consent agenda, or do we have to take them in like licensing matters?
I think we can do them all, but I think there's an issue involving Mr. Hex.
Oh, yeah. I abstain from the vote.
Okay, completely.
Huh? Yeah, he can. Okay. So,
technically, would that be a recusal as opposed to an abstention?
Pardon?
It's a recusal.
Recusal? Recusal, okay. Correct. Okay. For that item. Yeah. And my vote will apply to the rest.
And that item is
either you pull it off and vote separately, or you recuse from the motion for the whole.
Okay, well, you got a majority, so I'll just recuse.
Okay, so right. Recuse from all items in that.
And then you can make a motion if you want. Unless there's anything else you want discussed. Or...
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to accept and approve the consent agenda as noted.
So this is
item four.
That would be item 4A.
Right. Any discussion by the board members on any of these applications? Apparently there is not. Is there a second?
We're all second the motion.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote and one recusal. Okay, we are past the consent agenda. Let's move on to licensing matters, or I'm sorry, enforcement matters.
Actually, we have adoption matters.
Oh, yeah. Jump the gun there. We're going to do item 5, adoption of minutes. This is to modify or approve or reject the April 25th, 2022 board minutes. Any discussion on the previous minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll motion to approve the minutes.
I second.
Okay, we have a first and second. Thank you. All those in favor of accepting the minutes from April 25th, please say aye.
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 Mr. Clarence Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Thank you. Now we're on to enforcement. We have Mr. 681 is Yoel Lopez, I think. He's a call-in if we have questions, correct, Kurt? That's what my notes say. So if there's no questions on 681 or 2, we could do...
He stated just to call if he's needed.
Yeah. So we could do a motion to accept staff's recommendation for dismissal for 6A1 and 6A2.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept staff's recommendation on dismissal for items 6A1 and 6A2.
I second.
Real quick. I apologize. Do you guys have the sign-in sheets from the front?
I do.
Okay, is anybody here for 6A1 or 6A2?
No one on this list.
All right. I apologize.
No problem.
Make sure we're all good to go.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote for item 681 and 682. 683. Someone, there we go. 683, let me get there. This is agenda item, case number P22026. Respondents, Mr. Richard Elliott. The synopsis of the complaint. On October 26, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent engaged in the practice of land surveying when he performed construction staking for the foundation at 2883 West Patio del Presidio, Lot 11A in Flagstaff, Arizona. Right now there is a recommendation for dismissal. This is an interesting case. Mr. Carthel, can you give us some background on this, please?
Sure. Just for the board's knowledge, I believe the alleger was supposed to have called in and be virtual. She had mentioned that she was going to.
I would say she is indeed online.
Okay.
You're actually online.
Ah, great. Okay. Ms. Elms, can you... we'll start with you since you're calling in. Can you give us a kind of a quick summary of some of the background in this case? I know it's complicated, but there is a recommendation for dismissal. So please share your position on this with the board.
Well, it's my understanding that Mr. Richard Elliott is self-employed, according to his own statement, that he doesn't work for anybody else, and that he was the one who was hired by... He says Haven Construction or Haven Homes, those words are used interchangeably to describe the builder of my home. That's not uncommon. They actually use those terms interchangeably, even though they're different businesses and one of them is not even legally licensed to be a builder. But they reportedly hired him to do the construction staking for my home, and he says that he is unlicensed. I verified, and I only came across him through a licensed land surveyor. who told me about him, because he said he's really the only other one that probably did the construction staking for homes in the area, because he said that he knows that he did it for other builders. Well, he said that Martin was the land surveyor who is licensed, and he said that he did the construction staking for like Miramonte homes and Capstone and some of the bigger builders in the area. But he said the only other land surveyor that I can tell you who did anything was Mr. Richard Elliott. He said, but he's not licensed, so you won't be able to find him. He said, but I can give you his number. And so he did. So I contacted him, and this was only after I was led to Martin by another land surveyor who said that he wouldn't get involved at all. And so with Presidio in the Pines, where I live, because he said there were so many different surveyors who had been involved out here that he didn't want to get involved with the mess out here, and he thought that there were too many problems. So he said that he said I could call around, and he mentioned Martin's name. And he said I'd call around and, you know, try to call a couple of people that might have been involved with your house and give you a call back. And I said, well, I appreciate your help, is what I said to the man. And but he didn't call me back, and so I just followed up on the lead of Martin, and that's how I was led to Richard Elliott. When I spoke with Richard Elliott, he confessed on the phone that he was unlicensed, but it was only after some probing, and then he told me in the next conversation that he was the one who did my house, and also the one who lived next door to me, who was at the time a city building inspector, who is no longer working for the city, and no longer lives next door to me. And he said that, and he knew what my house was right away, because he had also done the construction staking for the city building inspector. And he said that all of his clients, as he called them, know that he's unlicensed and that he did the construction staking for my house. But he said, but I didn't build any walls or anything like that for your house. So I don't know what you really want from me. And I said, well, I'm just trying to understand who was involved with my house. And I explained to him that it appears that my house might not even be on, you know, in the right spot on my lot and that kind of thing. And so I just asked him to, you know, be cooperative and help me and to verify who paid him and how much. And he didn't do it. He just shut down and refused to cooperate at that point. And so when I had called the Board of Technical Registration and asked, is this legal? I was told no, and to file a complaint. But then I was transferred to somebody else, and that person told me the best thing to do was to file a complaint. And so I was kind of surprised to hear that, especially after the conversation with the committee, that it was being recommended for dismissal. And so as I was doing some more reading, I found that even in the regulations, there's a rule, for example, that says regarding construction staking, that's a requirement for a land surveyor and training designation based on experience. And that there's also a rule regarding surveying defined under engineer and training designation. So that was difficult for me, because it was like, wow, it's like they're recommending this to be dismissed, and I don't know why. I don't know what that is about. Like I said, that I have a lot of problems with my house. A lot of it has to do with and there's lots of different reasons as to why I have problems with my house, but it could actually have started with where the house was actually staked out because it's possible from what I'm learning more and more about my house that it's possible it's because of where it was staked out and possibly because it might have been staked out too small even, is the newest thing that I've learned. And so it's the problem just seems to be getting bigger and bigger the more I learn about it.
Ms. Elms, this is Jack Gilmore, I'm the chair. You attended the EAC meeting, I see, and I think the EAC members, some of those attendees, agreed that there appeared to be some problems with the performance of construction staking, but there was a problem with evidence. So I think that was the final determination. They could not cite specific evidence, and it gets into a gray area here. So I think EAC members decided that there was not enough evidence to pursue a violation, so that was the basis for the dismissal.
It looks like there were two not substantiated EAC votes, and one substantiated with a level 5 in terms of severity.
Mr. Cartel, can you share any additional insight on this?
Sure. So with the understanding that this is a broader situation that goes beyond our jurisdiction, there's also I believe a complaint with the ROC against the builders. What I was able to get was, I did speak with Mr. Elliott. He acknowledged to me that he's not licensed and that he did construction staking. He said he didn't produce any documents. I had asked for any documents he might have, so he didn't produce any, but he simply staked out the positioning for the home. He qualified that with the fact that he didn't do anything with the boundary of the lot. I also spoke to Mr. Blaine, who's the building inspector and also one of the occupants of that neighborhood. Initially, Mr. Blaine said that Mr. Elliott did the land plotting for that community, but later on in a second interview, when I was inviting him to the EAC, he had kind of changed the story in that he wasn't sure 100% what he did, but believed it was more just the positioning of the home and the lot with boundary lines that were already in place. I also spoke with Mr. Job, and he is the developer that hired Mr. Elliott. Mr. Job said he hired him simply to use a metal detector to find old monuments to verify where the boundary lines are. In comparing that with the legal definition of land surveying, there is a portion of it that speaks about positioning for new construction, which I believe is what Mr. Elliott described. And finding or remarking boundary lines or markers, which I believe also depicts that. When we got to the EAC, the trouble that we ran into was, first of all, we have no documentation that he produced at all. The one that hired him, Mr. Job, he remembers hiring him to do, generally, to find monuments, but doesn't have specific memory to that lot or to that day. Mr. Blaine had changed his story, so that kind of hurt us a little bit. And the alleger in this case has done a lot of digging and investigation of her own, which is a credit to her. However, she has no direct, no immediate firsthand knowledge of this. She wasn't involved until after the fact. And the documentation she was able to find was more in relation to the construction than Mr. Elliott. The overall consensus was that there likely was a violation of board statute, but that we just didn't have enough to verify it with any real certainty. The other question that came up was whether he fell under the exemption of being an employee of the contractor. And there was a difference in opinion of that as well, that he was more of a subcontractor as opposed to an immediate employee. So there was just, the overall consensus was just that there was not quite enough to put it forward with any certainty.
Thank you. I got another question for you.
Sure.
The HOA notes indicate that there's supposed to be certification by an engineer that the home is located correctly. Did that ever occur?
Not that I know of.
Okay. And there is this...
No.
Excuse me. Yeah.
As far as I know, that has not been verified. But the other thing is that Richard Elliott, I provided recordings of my conversations with Richard Elliott, and he said that he definitely didn't. I even provided a copy of the text messages that I had with him, but and how he actually called me when I confronted him on it, and I provided those recordings. So why are his statements not good enough?
I don't have an answer for you right now. I think the EDC members are looking for, in effect, what they call a paper trail, and apparently it does not exist to the satisfaction of establishing a problem.
I wonder, I do know that he goes to Mongolian land surveying.
Question.
He goes to Mongolian land surveying, which they don't do surveying anymore, but they...
Ms. Elms, I want to bring a separate discussion by the board. Please hold for a second. There is this, apparently, a qualification within the legislation that allows contractors to hire these guys without registration to do construction staking.
If I understand that statute correctly, a direct employee of a contractor can do limited land surveying without a license and be qualified under that exemption. I don't quite believe Mr. Elliott qualifies for that because he was a subcontractor as opposed to a direct employee, but that was one of the things that there was a difference of opinion in the EAC meeting.
Okay. And I suppose that's going to go to the heart of the question. When is surveying and when is construction staking not surveying? So that's something we're not going to solve today, but I think that's an interesting discussion. And that might be something we need to agendize for maybe a clarification. I'm curious about that.
I believe the statute or the definition is actually a statute as opposed to a rule, if I remember correctly.
Okay. I just see a gap there. Because anybody doing construction staking has to locate the pins, property line, to figure out the offsets, and to do vertical control on slabs.
It is a pretty broad definition.
Yeah. Curious. Mr. Hackey, anything to share on this?
Well, it is a gray area. These type of homes I normally never get to go stake. The builder doesn't. You know, they find the monuments, they pull a string line, they pull a tape, and they run with it for these small lots. When you start getting custom homes, that's when the surveyors are called in. Keep in mind, too, that construction staking can also be done by civil engineers. So either can do that. But usually on homes like this, surveyors are not called.
Okay.
We don't stake out these type of homes. They're too small. And it's the general contractor who will have it done.
Ms. Elms, unfortunately, I don't think there's anything the board can pursue here, so that I think that was the recommendation for dismissal, the basis. There are other avenues you can pursue, what you're doing, I guess, right now with the ROC, but we have our boundaries here. Ms. Elms?
She's currently on mute.
Okay. Any other discussion by the board on this item? Okay. Can I get a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to follow staff recommendation and dismiss case 6A3.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a first and a second to dismiss P22026. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobig?
Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote. Ms. Elms,
Mr.
Chair, thanks for calling
I'm also
in.
Also here now.
Oh, looks like Mr. Wilson's on now.
Ah, that's right. I'm sorry. Did you get
and I also vote aye.
Who does vote aye? Okay. You heard all that? Great.
I did, yeah.
Okay, so the record shows Mr. Wilson is now online. Great. Okay, 6B1. We got... Kurt, do we have other attendees that... Oh, okay, we got vendors coming up next. All right. 6B1, I think this is a proposed resolution but a consent agreement. And 6B2, the same. Mr. Goss is online if there are questions. Any of the board members have questions regarding 6B1 or 2? So we could maybe make a motion to accept staff recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Dr. Campbell. I'd like to propose that we accept staff recommendation related to items 6B1 and 6B2.
Okay.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Thank you, Mr. Hack. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor accepting staff recommendation to accept the signed consent agreements, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Okay. We have a unanimous vote. Thank you. Okay, we can move on to item C. This is item 61. I need to recuse myself from this one, so I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Kalika to run the show.
Thanks, Jack. And it looks like we do have, Kurt, one individual on the line for 61. Is that right? Mr. Smith and Mr. Brown, the ledgers.
Barney Smith and Catherine Brown, are you on the call?
Yes, we are.
All right, so for item 6C1, the synopsis of the complaint on December 16th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that on or about October 12th, 2018, respondent prepared and sealed a site investigation that falsely reported that the site could support a conventional septic system at the Brown residence in Fort McDowell, Arizona. It is further alleged that the respondent was dishonest with her client regarding plan review submittals, failed to submit a design for an alternative septic system, prepared and sealed a site plan placing wastewater system less than 50 feet from the property line, and then abandoned the project after being paid $2,500. Would we like to hear from the alleges first, since they're on the line? If so...
Also the respondent's here as well.
Yeah.
Oh, Catherine Mills is here.
Oh, and Catherine Mills is here. Okay, I'm sorry.
Would you like her to approach the table?
Yeah, wouldn't mind, Ms. Mills, please approach. You can have a seat right there. Yeah, thank you. All right, Ms. Brown, if you'd like to share your briefly some thoughts on this this matter.
Me?
Yes.
What are my thoughts? We actually did some more digging, and we had a conversation with the county on June 30th, and the lady at the county, I don't remember her name, she told us that Ms. Mills put in for an engineered system and never a conventional one. So, what am I saying? Yeah, Kathy Mills never told us that was the case.
Okay.
But she charged us for two different systems, the conventional and the engineered systems, and always from the beginning said this site would support a conventional system, and called the, when we seen the plans that she was going to submit, that she claimed she was going to in January, and in fact didn't until June 30th, or just before June 30th, that it was an engineered system, not the conventional. We wouldn't have bought the if we knew that the lot wasn't going to support a conventional system. And so unknowingly, we went ahead and bought the land and then found out after the fact, after many attempts trying to get her to correct all these matters, now we're jumping months and months ahead, that we had to hire somebody else, and that was Mark Fleetwood. And that's when there was a landslide, you know, that supposed 12-hole deep test site was only approximately 28 to 38 inches deep before we hit a layer of rock. And we had to start all over again. And that was with our new septic engineer, and that was Mr. Fleetwood.
Okay. Before we hear from Ms. Mills, would staff like to add anything as far as staff findings?
Well, in this case, there were some different elements, frankly, that developed during the course of the investigation. I should point out to board members with respect to the site investigation report, there was actually two of them, one that was prepared by Ms. Mills, and then a second one that I obtained through a board subpoena that was prepared by Mr. Fleetwood, who essentially replaced Ms. Mills at the decision of the alleges. There was a total of four allegations that resulted from what I found. And frankly, when this matter proceeded to Enforcement Advisory Committee, Ms. Mills wasn't present for that, despite being advised when it was and what didn't participate. However, EAC board members substantiated two of the four allegations, and two they did not. And frankly, one of the allegations they did not substantiate was specific to misrepresentation and fraud and that kind of thing. And clearly, with respect to the site investigation report, there's compelling evidence that the report was falsified or otherwise misrepresentations, to include the fact that Ms. Mills did not conduct the site investigation herself. That was conducted by someone else. She was not there. There was an issue with respect to the alleges, specific to the three test holes that were dug in the course of the site investigation. Initially, Ms. Mills' report reflects 144 inches for all three test holes, which is 12 feet. But was not there at the time that took place. Now, the alleges were there for a second test hole dig that was done with Mr. Fleetwood, who's also a civil engineer. And when comparing the site investigation report side by side, Ms. Mills' report reflects 144 inches for all three test holes. Mr. Fleetwood's report specifically indicated that refusal resulted, meaning that penetration wasn't something that took place beyond 28 inches for one of the three test holes. So major difference there. We're not talking about something that's fairly close, simply an issue with respect to that that the alleges brought forth, and certainly Mr. Fleetwood, during the course of the Enforcement Advisory Committee, was there and present and also brought forth that simply couldn't have taken place with respect to penetration to 12 feet. So there are a number of issues with this case, including EAC not substantiating one allegation, which clearly there's compelling evidence that should result in that. So I need to bring that forth, and of course Ms. Mills needs to present the information that she has. Frankly, she hasn't been heard yet because she wasn't at EAC, but is here today, which is a good thing.
Thank you. Ms. Mills?
So if we start with in 2018, when the soil testing was done, the person that did it is a person that works directly for me. So as I see it, they're a bona fide employee. They're a contract employee, but they work directly for me. They're under my direct supervision. So I was not at the site, but I've been to many sites with this person. I'm confident in their skills, and so I didn't have any issue with them taking care of the project. So as I see it, this is the same as a registered land surveyor having a crew doing the survey, and then they review it and seal it. This is the same as if I had a construction inspector go out and review installation of pipes in the ground to make sure it's as followed the plan, or if it wasn't, then mark it up to see what changed so then we could do an as-built, then I would seal. I don't understand why you're saying that this is not under my direct supervision. So that's my first point. As far as getting to the 12 feet, we dug 3 test holes in the center of the lot. It was where we were given a sketch of here's where your septic system will go next to the house, which is very rough. So we found an area that we thought this looks like it'll be good soil, and that's where we dug. The civil engineer that did the site plan then put the system way down on the south side where we did not dig test holes. And so I
Someone muted you. Press star 6 to unmute.
No, you said you did.
We even redug there.
If you could
please wait until the respondent has a chance to finish her statements, please. Thank you.
So we should have dug new test holes before we submitted the plans to show that that area was also good, but we did not. So that was an error on our part that we did not dig new test holes in the new area. And so as far as the design, it was both conventional and alternative. We had put a conventional system in where the grading engineer had shown that he could grade it flat enough so that the downslope would be less than 15%, because that's one of the requirements. If you have no limiting condition, you'd be down to 12 feet, and you have downslope of 20 feet that's less than 15%, you can put a conventional septic system in. So that's what we designed for the primary area. For the secondary area, for replacement in 20 to 30 years, we designed an alternative system, so we did design both.
I apologize. When we heard that you've been muted, somebody did in fact mute our phone. That's in the meeting. They could do that, apparently. So everybody on the phone has been unable to hear us, so we'll have to need to repeat what you said, Kirk.
It's Russia.
Did we just resume now, Kurt, or did it? How much time did? Because I think
since you
have
that announcement,
okay,
so we'll just have to take it back to there.
I apologize, Ms. Mills.
Hello.
Would you mind repeating?
I guess explain to them what happened, maybe.
Yeah. So.
Hello.
Yeah,
can you guys hear us now?
Yeah, Mr. Smith, Mr. Brown. Yeah, we can hear you. We were in the process of hearing from Ms. Mills.
Yep, I
and,
have audio back.
Can you hear us now?
I think we have a little echo there.
Okay, one moment. We're going to reconnect.
This is Barney Smith and Catherine Brown.
Yes. Can you hear us?
Been doing this for like 2 years now. That's the first time this has ever happened.
I didn't know they could mute us. That's interesting.
That is interesting. Kind of interesting how they decided they wanted to mute everybody and so they could speak.
Now's the time to go back to DOS.
Sorry.
Welcome to Google Meet. Enter the meeting pin followed by the pound key. Thank you. You're muted because a lot of people are on this call. Press star 6 to unmute. You unmuted yourself.
Hello everyone, this is Kurt Winter, Deputy Director of the Board of Technical Administration. I ask that if you're on the call on your computer to not mute our phone. We lost audio there for a bit, so please don't do that. If you want to speak, just kind of let us know. You don't have to mute us. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure where we left off, though, as far as when. Was it when Ms. Mills was speaking, Kurt, or was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was when Ms. Mills was interrupted.
Okay.
So if we could take it back.
If you wouldn't mind repeating that.
I'm not sure if I had finished the talk about the site investigation and moved on, and then moved on after that break.
I believe it was after the site investigation, but before your second.
Yeah, I believe the last thing was that you had not drilled the second set of holes.
Right. So we did not dig the second set of holes. Right.
Right.
And we needed to. And then, so as far as the design. So we designed a conventional septic system in the area that the civil grading engineer had put in, because he showed that we could do the grading 20 feet downhill with a slope less than 15%, which is required for conventional septic, and that 20 feet is for conventional septic, meaning we did not get any refusal or other limiting conditions up to 12 feet below grade. And then we did not have an area that met that for the reserve area for 20 to 30 years in the future, so we designed an alternative system with full treatment and drip emitters, which are the only thing allowed within 3 feet of a slope greater than 15%. And so we did design both as part of the design.
I'd like to hear from our engineer on the board here as far as any comments related to.
Yeah, there's a lot of things involved in this specific case here. I guess it's looking at the site plan and information there on when you first put the poles, I guess, in the center of the lot. Was that under the house itself, or was there still room on the lot for the house to go and the septic?
There was no plan at that point of where the house would be. We received a very rough sketch saying, here's the house, here's the septic next to it. So that's what we went by. And along with looking where it looked like it would be good soil. Because typically people, if it could save them $30,000, they may move the house a little bit.
Okay. I guess I don't really have anything else. There's a lot of information in here and
I'd like to hear from the rest of the board if there's any other comments.
I looked at the models, so I know that I couldn't take a shovel and dig 2 feet down in my yard. So did you use hollow stem augers to get down to 12 feet?
We used a backhoe.
A backhoe? Oh, so you dug.
And I also looked at all the houses surrounding this site. Every single one of them has a conventional septic system, and I have on flash drive all the permits if you wanted to see
when
them.
When you say conventional, do you mean leach fields?
Trenches, pits,
and
leach beds.
Okay.
So no treatment.
Okay.
And they all show that they've, like even the seepage pit ones, show that they drilled down 45 feet or something. And
yeah,
so,
that's...
I mean, I think there are most of the other areas of Fort McDowell that we've done test holes in, we do hit rock.
Yeah, so you hit a really good spot for the septic system.
And I guess what about the information there about the septic system being within 50 feet of the property line?
Yes, it was, and I didn't realize that because I didn't tell the civil engineer to keep it 50 feet away. Well, that was a rush to get the project out. So.
Mr. Smith, I believe you had something else you wanted to add.
Well, there's plenty, but she's going to base these, you know, lying on a soil report on what she sees when she couldn't even go and see our site and see the pole dug and then put her stamp on it, her signature. That's ridiculous. And the other thing is, too, approach 20, not 20 times, but that 20-foot thing, we sent many emails to her and she wouldn't respond. Trying and trying to phone call her, wouldn't respond. Joe Watson, our civil engineer, not ever hearing from her either. Now, there was an attempt for that test hole over on the area that Joe Watson might have suggested, and it was apparent that you couldn't put it there because there was stone layers sticking out of the ground. I'm not a civil engineer or geologist or anything, but boy, we started learning a lot after this started.
Okay. So currently staff recommendation is to offer a proposed consent agreement encompassing the following. If not signed within 30 days, it would proceed to hearing. 1, letter of reprimand. 2, state revocation and probation and registration. 3, restitution in the amount of $2,500. 4, administrative penalty in the amount of $2,000. And 5, cost of investigation in the amount of $1,096. Ms. Mills, assuming you have we had a chance to send this over to Ms. Mills yet, or is this the first time we're discussing?
I've seen it.
Okay. And are you in agreement with those terms?
I will agree to pay the fine, refund the money, and pay for the investigation. However, I do not believe that the soil report was fraud because the person works directly for me.
Any discussion by the board relative to what's offered by staff? Or any further comment from staff as well?
Well, frankly, the Enforcement Advisory Committee did not substantiate that allegation as such. It's not in the consent agreement. It's not there. It can't be
fraud was the soil report.
It's not in the consent agreement. That was not substantiated at EACN as such. It is not shown in the consent agreement. It's not there.
Right, and that's what I see here, too. So based on that, it sounds like the respondent is acceptable to the terms that staff is recommending. Any further comments from the board? All right, then, based on the investigative conclusions, I'll open up to a motion.
This is Scott Sales. I will motion to offer the consent agreement.
Great, thank you. Do we have a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
If I may, Mr. Chair, would that include, if not accepted in 30 days, to then forward the matter for a hearing?
Correct, yes, per the staff recommendation.
When does the 30 days start?
I believe it would start today. Is that right, Scott? Mm-hmm. Yes, it would start today. All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And on the phone, Mr. Campbell.
Campbell says aye.
Can I say something? Aye.
Wilson.
All right.
Hey, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, hey, Mr. Wilson, are you voting?
Aye.
All right. No opposing, therefore, motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Mills. Jack, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaluga.
Mr. Chairman.
Who's speaking?
This is Dr. Campbell. I noticed from our prior case, number 6, B as in boy, 2, says Mr. Daniel Goss, G-O-S-S. I noticed that he's active in the people present on the call, and maybe we can get his attention and let him know just in case he wasn't intending to stay for the entire meeting.
Oh, Mr. Goss, are you still online? Kurt?
He's currently driving.
Oh.
So, but I think at this point, Mr. Goss, if you would like to go off the call, you may. If you want to stay for the meeting, you may as well. Up to you.
Yeah, Mr. Goss, we accepted the signed consent agreement, so you're welcome to listen
okay.
in.
Okay, I understand. No, that's totally fine. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Can I speak to you?
Sorry, who is that?
That was Catherine Brown, the owner. Can you sum up exactly what happened? I mean, are we getting our money back?
Yes, so the staff recommendation included restitution in the amount of $2,500. So that is part of the proposal.
Okay, please.
And the respondent has 30 days to sign that consent agreement. If that's signed, then that's what will happen. If not, it will move to a formal hearing.
Does that help answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Good day.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're moving on to item 6C2. This is HI-22-028. On April 4, 2022, the board opened a complaint alleging that respondent, owner of respondent firm, and respondent firm advertised the practice of home inspection on their website without firm registration with the board. Board records indicated that respondent firm's registration expired on August 13, 2020. And we have Mr. Crum is online.
He is indeed.
Okay. Mr. Crum, we have we have a recommendation for a proposed consent agreement with a letter of reprimand and some fees. Can you share your position on this case with us, please? Give us a summary.
Sure. It lapsed. The firm registration lapsed. It was an oversight. And as soon as the investigator sent the email letting me know, within 1 hour, the check was in the mail. It was on the way. I've since hired an office manager so that I don't have any more issues. And I guess the questions that I have are, what constitutes a letter of reprimand? What is the timeline where it goes from just being late and, you know, to a letter of reprimand? To me is pretty serious. And when I was talking to the investigator, she said, well, Mr. Crum, why are you so upset about getting a letter of reprimand? And I'm like, this is my livelihood here, and now I have another person working for my firm, and it's their livelihood as well. And I mean, I don't know what the end result here that we're supposed to be trying to achieve. Is it compliance, or is it just hammering people, you know? And I asked, what is the timeline? Is it 30 days? Is it 60 days after it lapses? She said, well, it's a matrix. And I'm like, come on, a matrix? What does that mean? Either you have it or you don't. I'd like to have a copy of the matrix then that you guys are using to penalize and reprimand me.
Okay, and hold on, said, well, Mr. Crum, I want to hear from our investigator, Ms. Lyra. Can you share staff position on this, please?
Yeah, so the firm registration is almost 2 years expired. So we use, based on the matrix that we used consistently for firm issues, I did a proposed consent agreement based on the matrix and the time frame for that.
And when I requested a copy of the matrix.
Mr. Crum, we're having discussion with board members first. We'll give you another chance. Ms. Lear, is there any history of problems with this registrant?
There has been a prior consent agreement with this individual.
How long ago was that?
I don't remember the, I remember the case number. It's a HI-20, so about
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, roughly. Okay. And, you know, based on our prior experience of these kind of late registrations, this is consistent with what we've done in the past?
Correct.
Board members, any discussion?
Oh, Mr. Chair, if I may, just from a legal standpoint, just to make sure the board members and new board members are aware, a letter of reprimand is the lowest possible level of discipline. It is the entry-level discipline.
Versus a letter of concern is non-disciplinary.
Letter of concern is non-disciplinary. A letter of reprimand is disciplinary, and then it proceeds from there through probation and suspension and revocation.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it seems like, you know, the letter of reprimand, as Mr. Donson mentioned, is fairly small on the grand scheme of things, and then the penalty of $350 and investigation of $88 seems like a, in my opinion, a reasonable recommendation by staff as far as the allegations are concerned.
Mr. Crum, do you understand this is based on prior actions of the board? We're trying to be consistent.
That doesn't mean that it's fair, and I think that a timeline needs to be established. When do you, is it 30 days after the registration has lapsed? Is it a year after? Nothing is written down. There's nothing to go by, so they're just pulling numbers out. And I've realized that this has happened in the past, but that doesn't mean that it's right. And I'm very upset about this because there was no misrepresentation made. There was no attempt to fraud anybody. It was an oversight, and I've corrected it. I've hired an office manager. And you know what? For the state to go straight to the hammer rather than, here's a courtesy, this is what's going on, we want you. Why are they trying to hammer me? I had that thing taken care of within 2 days. They had my check and it was done. There was no attempt to defraud or anything. And a letter of reprimand is unwarranted and, in my opinion, very severe. Whether you guys think it's the lowest level or whatever, how would you like to have one on your file? I don't think I deserve this.
Mr. Crown, I think I appreciate the fact that you've had very few claims or complaints filed. But we need to be consistent, and you know the fact that this is the lowest level of disciplinary action that we can take versus a dismissal, I think is fair relative to this position. You were lapped for 2 years, so this is not a short term.
I was not lapsed for 2 years. It was about a year and a half. It was not 2 years.
Okay.
Dismissed during that time.
Yeah. And obviously, yeah, and the question comes about that you were still in business doing inspections during the time that you were not.
And I'm duly licensed and insured, and everything is okay. There was no attempt to do anything wrong or defraud. They were able to get a hold of me right now when they want to penalize me, but where is the courtesy? Your thing, your license, your firm registration has lapsed. Can you get it up today? I don't understand why we got to go to the hammer right now.
Well, this is, I can assure you, this is not a hammer. And it's your opinion.
If I don't agree to this, do we have a formal hearing so I can bring an attorney?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
If I do not agree to this in the 30 days or whatever, then it goes to a formal hearing and I can have an attorney present?
That's correct.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And additionally, under Arizona law, it is important to note that the board can also pursue costs and fees incurred in readiness to a prosecution.
Yeah, you do expose yourself to additional fees and expenses. But that's your choice. So we have a motion.
Why can't it just be dismissed? I've hired an office manager. I've rectified the situation. It's not likely to happen. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't defraud anybody. Nobody was harmed.
Mr. Crum, you've made your position very clear. I think there's a recommendation from staff to offer a consent agreement with a letter of reprimand and some minor fees. So I think I'd like to entertain a motion at this time.
Chair, this is Mike Lake. I will make a motion to accept staff's recommendation for the proposed consent agreement, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing. Letter of reprimand, administrative penalty of $350, and cost of investigation of $88.
I second.
And if not signed within 30 days, you got that?
Yes, I put that in there as well, that it would proceed to hearing.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Mr. Hack, thank you. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting staff recommendation for the consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell? Mr. Campbell? Okay. Ms. Hogan?
Aye.
Ms. Hogan?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay, we're going to move on to item 63. This is almost identical. On March the 16th, this is case number HI-22-027. The synopsis of this complaint. On March the 16th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, owner of respondent firm and respondent firm advertised the practice of home inspection on their website without firm registration with the board. Board records show no indication that respondent firm has ever been registered with the board. Do we have anybody?
I believe respondent was saying he would like to address the board on this one.
I'm sorry, who did?
I believe a respondent had mentioned that he would like to address the board on this one. I don't know if he's called in or not.
There's nobody on that.
Mr. Delaney, are you online? Okay.
If he was actually initially told me he was going to be here in person, so I didn't forward him.
Okay. Yeah, he's on our call list.
Okay. I apologize.
No problem. maybe he's going to call in still. Mr. Cartel, can you share with the board a summary of this?
Sure. So this came in as a complaint that his firm had never been registered. After doing some digging in our records, he was registered. He had changed his name and registered as a DBA, doing business as, under a different name. So it was registered. But we were still able to track down when it had expired. As it turns out, he was expired for about 2 years. When he received the notice of investigation, he contacted me, and he expressed that he believed he had been registered and was cooperative with the investigation. He has re-registered it, same name, but with a different number because it had been closed. So he is currently in compliance, but there's about a two-year period there where he was not. I drafted a consent agreement similar to the last case of, as far as the letter of reprimand and the penalties and whatnot. Respondent's only issue with that is that he also operates as a peer reviewer, and he's concerned about losing his ability to do peer reviews because of discipline. So he had expressed wanting to address the board regarding that, but apparently wasn't able to make it in.
Scott, is if this kind of a letter of reprimand, was that disqualifying him from doing peer reviews, or is it just a black eye?
I believe that does disqualify.
I believe the rule is he can't have disciplinary action within the last 3 years in order to do peer reviews and parallel inspections.
Okay. For the sake of consistency, I think our direction is pretty well clear. Any discussion by the board?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would potentially be open to other options, but since Mr. Delaney is not here to speak on his behalf, I feel like we should stay consistent with our standard procedures related to this and take staff's recommendation.
I have just a question on format. So I'm assuming these allegations came through, were sent by someone to the board and not the board, looking at these folks, okay, they expired 2 years.
I believe it was the board staff doing audits on our system.
Okay. All right.
This is not for the public.
Okay.
And for the record, it's not really up to the board staff to remind our registrants that they've got to get current. It's really up to them. So,
although we do receive reminders.
Do they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so when this guy says, no one ever told him, that's not really true. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Purposes as opposed to obligation.
I mean, it's up to the registrant to be mindful of their expiration and renewal dates.
That's correct. Yes.
That's where you hire. We're all in
that position. Okay, I think, is there a motion then to on this case?
Mr. Chair, I'll motion to offer the consent agreement, not signed within 30 days, proceed to the hearing, including the letter of reprimand, administrative penalty of $350, and cost of investigation amount of $97. I second.
Okay, we have a motion, Mr. Sales, and a second by Mr. Hack. All those in favor of accepting staff recommendation for the proposed consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson, we'll go backwards this time.
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to 6D1. This is case number P22-048. The synopsis of this complaint. At February 22nd, 2022 meeting, after reviewing case number P22-020, the board directed staff to open a case against the respondent. It's alleged that on or about August 23rd, 2018, respondent and respondent firm prepared and provide sealed landscape architectural design plans for the Duncan Residence project in Scottsdale, Arizona, without registration with the board. The board shows no record the respondent or respondent firm have ever been registered by the board. I think we all recall this is related to several other cases. Um, There is a staff recommendation Mr. Ernest, you're not a registrant, so there's not too much that the board can do except to recognize that there is potentially a conflict. Since you're here, Ms. Winters, can you share with the board some quick history behind what transpired?
We were involved in a project in a train. Our business has been based on residential landscape design for 38 years, typically not requiring seals, and we don't try to do work that requires it. I have known and worked with Dan Goss on this project and have known him for 30 plus years. And there's several buildings in Trim that just don't require seals, and then it became clear that it did. In working closely with Dan on this project, we had him prepare the documents that would allow us to move forward with the project. One of the problems was that the homeowner and the builder never intended to follow any of the rules, and I refused to be involved. And I really believe that's why this happened.
First of all, thank you for coming in. I think it's pretty clear, and I understand that you've got a long relationship with Mr. Goss. And I think it's been made apparent, obviously, that there are limitations on what you can do. Single family is not an issue, but the HOA wanted a stamp. So how that transpired is part of the issue, but the fact that you've got this long-standing relationship with Mr. Goss and the fact that you guys were collaboratively working on design together, it kind of muddies the works, but at least you understand the restriction now. Anything, any kind of a document, for instance, in a commercial scale or an HOA that needs a stamp, it's got to be done by the register at the plans. So I don't know if there's a whole lot of pursuit here, and I think my own thought is this thing should be dismissed. I'll open it up for discussion by the board.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that as well.
Yeah, I agree too.
Okay. Any other board members want to discuss this? Do we need, I think we need a motion here.
I guess since there was a proposal for an offer of consent agreement, I guess it would just be that we are dismissing the case entirely.
But there's no consent agreement.
Yeah,
there's
nothing.
So, yeah, you can
just ask for board direction.
Okay. Mr. Chair, then, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to dismiss agenda item 6C, 6D1.
Mm-hmm. I second.
Great. We have a motion by Mr. Kalika and a second by Mr. Hack to dismiss this case. All those in favor of dismissing this case, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson? Mr. Wilson? He's around.
He's muted.
Aye.
Ah, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote to dismiss. Ms. Winter, thanks for coming in. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move on to item 6D2. We have no one calling in or attending for this one. This is a complaint requiring board guidance. This is case number HI-22-033. The synopsis complaint on April 4, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, owner of respondent firm, and respondent firm advertised the practice of home inspection on their website without firm registration with the board. Board records indicated that respondent firm's registration expired on March the 18th, 2021. It's further alleged that the respondent engaged in practice of home inspection without current home inspector certification with the board. Board records show that respondent's home inspector certification was suspended on or about April the 4th, 2022, failing to provide proof of financial insurance to the board pursuant to ARS 32-122-02C. Okay, this is a requesting board guidance. Mr. Cartel, can you share the board staff's position on this, please?
Yes, sir. So this one is similar to the previous firm registration ones as far as how we came across the information. It differs in the reasoning for it. When I had reached out to respondent, he informed me that he had no intention of renewing his license and hadn't conducted a home inspection in 6 months prior to receiving the notice of investigation, and had actually canceled his insurance because of no longer doing home inspections. So I don't believe we have a violation as far as conducting home inspections with a suspension. Based on his word, he had not been doing any, and we haven't received any information to the contrary. Where there may be a violation is that he was advertising on his website without firm registration for almost a year. So it was just under a year. His reasoning for that was that he had simply forgotten that he had a website, so he hadn't done anything with it in a while. He did send me confirmation that his insurance had been canceled as opposed to lapsing. It was purposeful. He also verified that his website had been taken down. And I was able to verify that by trying to pull it up and wasn't able to. So I guess my question is, we may have a violation regarding firm registration. However, it's going to be with someone who has no interest in going forward with the profession. I don't believe he's canceled yet, but he is in an expired status.
He's taking his website down, is that correct?
I'm sorry.
He's taking his website down, right?
Yes, it's no longer active.
So, and that's, Mr. Cartel, that's basically the, looking at the conclusions here, that's really the only item of concern, if I can put it that way, in terms of that the website was up. He may have forgotten to take it down once he let his application in. In your opinion, do you feel that there was an explicit attempt to try to keep it up, or when you've spoken to him, was it just a lapse that he didn't realize it was still?
I don't believe there's any intention there. Can't really verify that with any real certainty, but I didn't sense any intention.
Who's the website through? Is it something like Google or?
I don't recall, to be honest. I believe it was, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think it was GoDaddy or something. I'm not real familiar with the servers.
But clearly his intent is to get out of the business. He's let his insurance go. He's taken down his website. So I don't see there's a lot to pursue here. So I would think we're going to dismiss this. Yeah. Okay. Can I get a motion for dismissal?
I'll move to dismiss case 6D2.
Very good.
I'll second that, Mike Kawinka.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Hack to dismiss this case and a second by Mr. Kalika. All those in favor of dismissing case HI-22-001, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Okay, 6E1. This is case number HI-22-001. I think I misquoted the last motion, Kurt. Can you fix that for me? I said we were going to dismiss HI-22-001, and I was looking at the next item.
You can just save it in advance.
Can I? Okay.
You just said it, so you're
All right, that was my mistake. It was HI 22-003 was the one we just dismissed. And they're now moving on to case 6E1, case number HI 22-001, involving Mr. Renteria. The synopsis of this complaint is on July 28, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, after conducting a home inspection at 7406 West Valencia Drive in Levine, Arizona, on or about November the 20th, 2021, failed to report on the adverse condition of the air conditioning system. It is also alleged that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of home inspection without firm registration with the board. Board records show no indication that respondent has ever been registered with the board. We have your ledger. Anybody online, Kurt?
Ms. Lewis, are you online?
Okay. We have no one.
See her listed and it's indicating here.
Ms. Lewis, are you online?
Would you like me to give her a call?
Yes, she wanted to participate. Is inclined to participate online.
Also, Angelica Lewis Insurance Services. I'm sorry I can't get to the phone right now, but if you leave me a detailed message, I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hello, Ms. Lewis. This is Kurt Winter at the AZVTR here at the board meeting, giving you a call to be part of the discussion. We may try again later.
Thank you, Kurt.
Mr. Chair, I think I could help with on the ledger.
Mr. Rome?
During the investigation at the point where we were convening an enforcement advisory committee, I reached out to Ms. Lewis, who conveyed that it was her inclination to simply withdraw the complaint entirely. That was her position. And just recently, when I informed her with respect to the board meeting date today, her inclination was to participate and to convey nothing but complimentary comments with respect to Mr. Renteria. So that was what her position has been conveyed to me, and I wanted to convey that to the board since she's available.
Great. Mr. Renteria?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you give us a quick summary of what's transpired here?
Yes, sir. In regards to the alleged or my registration?
No. The alleged, the complaint?
Okay. On that day, I was about 5 months into being a new home inspector. I was licensed already, went through the school and received everything from the state. And that day I completed the home inspection just as I was trained to do, and I have done the past 5-6 months. And the day of the home inspection, nobody met me at the house for the presentation. The realtor did not meet me as well. It was my understanding that Ms. Lewis was out of town in California, moving to Levine. And after I performed the home inspection, it was a Friday. And once I was completed, I reached out to Ms. Lewis and her agent multiple times to see if they had any questions on my findings. This house had a lot of issues, and the AC was one of them. Actually, both units were issues. specifically the thermostats. The thermostats were not responding to thermostatic controls. So I wrote that up. I simply put on my report, I recommend a qualified HVAC professional to examine and estimate for repairs. And then I get a letter from Doug Kramer saying that there's an issue and she's wanting to move forward with this with you guys at the board. So here we are.
Okay. You attended the EAC meeting?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There was some violations substantiated, but it was a pretty low level. Staff has offered a consent agreement. Have you ever reviewed that?
I have.
And are you prepared? Have you signed that?
I have.
Okay. Any question from the board to Mr. Renderia?
Sounds like he's accepted the terms of the consent agreement. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course, the other issue is with respect to the letter of concern. So the recommendation is, in addition to the consent agreement, with regard to the firm registration issues, a letter of concern specific to the deficiencies that were identified in the home inspection report.
Which was a letter of reprimand.
So it's two separate events. The letter of concern is pertaining to his individual license, and the consent agreement is for the firm registration of the business. That's the disciplinary action is with the firm. The letter of concern is with his personal certification as a home inspector. So it's two separate motions, if you will.
So do we make those as separate motions?
That'd be great.
Okay. So the...
So then the administrative penalty and the cost investigations for the firm, and it's just a letter of concern. To Mr. Renderia.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a, can I get a motion to that effect then regarding the letter of concern? We'll make two motions.
You do want motion to spell it out?
If the board wanted to take one to follow the staff recommendation to accept the signed consent agreement, and to issue a letter of concern with regards to the registrant, they certainly could put the motion that way. That's one motion.
As one,
you could do it as one motion that way if you wanted to.
Saves a lot of oxygen. and you're in agreement with the staff position on
this? Yes, it was an oversight. Like I said, I was new to the business, didn't know I had to register the firm as well. Just starting the business was, I thought I was good with the Corporation Commission. Apparently I was not. And you are right, I do get, now that I am registered, I do get a reminder. But you don't get a reminder if you're not registered. So that's oversight on my part.
Actually, it is on all the documentation when you are applying.
You're correct. It's oversight.
Yeah,
yes.
That's right. Okay, let's pursue then a single motion then, if that's okay to the board.
I'll motion that.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second.
That's good.
Spell it out.
We have a motion to offer Mr. Renderia a letter of concern regarding his registration.
No, a letter of concern regarding the
deficiencies.
Yes, for his individual certification.
All right, I got those backwards then. I'm mixed up here.
And it would be to issue, not offer.
Issue the letter of concern to him for his individual certification and accept the signed consent agreement for the phone.
Okay, so it's a letter of concern, offering a letter of concern regarding his
issue the letter.
Personal certification.
Okay.
My recommendation is specific to the letter of concern, specific to the deficiencies of the home inspection report.
Okay.
To him personally, as it relates to the deficiencies identified in the EAC report. How's that?
Is that motion acceptable? Do I need to repeat that?
I hate to ask, but
can you summarize?
Or perhaps if I help the board, let me see if I understand the motion as made. So this would be, if I understand correctly, a motion to issue the letter of concern to address the failings found by the EAC with regards to the report and to accept the already signed consent agreement. Does that adequately summarize the motion before the board?
That works for me. Thank you, Scott. We have a recommendation to combine these into one motion per Scott's language.
Mr. Nesgood made the motion. Right. Scott clarified for us, right?
I simply restated my understanding of the motion, but the motion was made by a board member, and yes.
Okay, so we have an initial motion by Mr. Nesgood, summarized by Mr. Scott Donaldson, and then, is there a second?
I'll second. I'll take
Mr. Hack, thank you. Gosh, appreciate that. Yeah, we'll get past this. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Great. We have a unanimous vote. Mr. Renneria, thanks for coming in. Good luck to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Oh, this patient lady is finally at the table. This is case number 6F1. The case number is P22-010. On August the 1st, 11th, the synopsis of the complaint, by the way, is on August the 11th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent firm engaged in the practice of land surveying without board registration. There is a very lengthy history of problems with this gentleman and prior adjudications. Please identify yourself.
My name is Helen Hain, H-A-I-N.
Can you share with the board your position on this? Appreciate your patience.
Thank you. Yes, my daughter and I are building a house, and we had hired an architect. And during the design of the house and so forth, it was determined we'd have to have a surveyor to identify the boundaries and also provide some type of a topo. And the architect had gotten the name of a surveyor from a fellow construction person. And the architect and myself trusted that the recommendation was a valid recommendation. So I made the call to Art at AAA Arizona Survey, and he explained what his fees were and that he would, of course, do the survey. Turned out not to be true. I made repeated calls to him. Of course, I paid him right away via Zelle, actually from my daughter, Zelle the money to him. And I had made very specific requests, asking him to let me know when he was gonna be going out there. I needed him to let me know the dates and time because I had a renter in that property and the house was ultimately gonna be torn down. Anyway, didn't hear back. So I made repeated text messages, phone calls. And although he agreed to go out there, he just didn't do anything for weeks on end. Ultimately told me that the plans were done and he would send those to the architect if I made final payment to him. And we made final payment to him for a total of $1,200. It was a completely unusable drawing. And we made, again, both myself and the architect made repeated requests to him and the company number. We got the names of three different people, but I believe all three people were the same man, Carlos, Mike, and Art. And ultimately, I just didn't get what I paid for. So I really thank the board for hearing the complaint and hopefully being able to help me recover that money.
First of all, thanks for coming in. Appreciate your patience waiting this long. There is a trail of problems chasing this guy around. and there is a recommendation by staff that this go directly to formal hearing. And I guess I got a question for Mr. Donaldson. Why isn't this going right to the Attorney General's office, or is this the process first?
This is the process first. Mr. Pia does have an extensive history. He's been revoked. The board has obtained an injunction against him to prevent him from holding out as able to do this. He has been avoiding service. The Pima County Sheriff's Office has been involved in trying to serve him with the injunction. The problem is with an injunction, because any violation of it is treated as contempt of court and can include jail time in addition to fines, actual service of an injunction has to be accomplished. At this point, my understanding is that it is with the Pima County Sheriff's Office. The only other thing, and I don't know if this has been brought up as an additional attempt, would be to attempt to have First Legal or another service provider attempt at the same time, attempt simultaneously to achieve service. But unfortunately, without accomplishing service of the injunction, the board is a little bit stuck in how far it can go. Forwarding this to a hearing, certainly the board can forward this to a hearing and proceed and obtain another decision against Mr. Padilla. I don't know what is going to stop him at this point outside of potentially jail time.
So I've been trying to serve for 4 years.
Yes.
So going to a hearing right now is really just to deal with her case, not any of the prior. Because
right.
Those have already been...
The priors have already... The board already has an injunction against Mr. Padilla.
Right.
The board has simply been unable to serve it upon him.
So, I guess the question is there a real benefit to going to hearing? We have to do that just to complete the process. Though. Okay.
In order to complete the process in this case, and to potentially, based upon the outcome of that, the board could potentially impose a penalty that might bring some degree of resolution in this case, should the board be able to secure the person of Mr. Biddy.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I should add, I think that potentially, if this case gets referred for formal hearing and is ultimately resolved, that essentially, of course, the case is resolved. And I think my concern is that with respect to this permanent injunction, of course, it's the responsibility of the board as a plaintiff to facilitate service of the injunction on Mr. Padilla. And frankly, if that takes place, we could, if it's effective, get Mr. Padilla to remove that website, which is really the tool he uses to victimize people. And that's still up and running and that kind of thing. So I would just hope that referring this matter to formal hearing won't ultimately resolve this case, because frankly, I think more can be done to facilitate service. Mr. Padilla's been in Tucson, hasn't gone anywhere to my knowledge, and he's still there, he's still operating. The Pima County Sheriff's Department has a lot of cases to deal with, including the one I gave them, which was this case, and they did make some attempts. However, they have a lot of cases and that kind of thing. And so I think that, in my view, the best recommendation I can make to the board is that there'll be a more aggressive approach in terms of getting this injunction served. It was issued in 2018. It's been 4 years. Having it's one thing. Getting it served and make it enforceable is another matter, and that has not happened. So I think that's something that the board needs to consider, because I think more can be done, frankly, to see that this injunction is served on Mr. Padilla.
Okay. Obviously, there's a big effort here to chase this guy down and serve him with this injunction, but we will make a proper recommendation that's going to form a hearing. Now, that's going to do much good, but at least that's more ammo against him. So, unfortunately, you've had to deal with a problem here. Hopefully, you've been able to get past this and you can get your home under construction, but unfortunately, these guys do exist, and we'll try and take care of this for you.
Perfect. Thank you for your help.
Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair,
oh,
motion.
I'm sorry. Yeah. We need to make a motion here. To accept the staff recommendation to move this case to a formal hearing.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to move this case, agenda item 6F1, regarding Mr. Padilla to
a
hearing.
Okay.
A second.
We have a motion by Mr. Kalika and a second by Mr. Hack. to follow staff recommendation and move this directly to the formal hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
We have an unanimous vote. Thank you. Ms. Daines, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Yeah. It's 10:35. Let's take a 10-minute break. And we can come back and discuss the good stuff.
We're going to go on mute during the 10-minute break. We are now recording.
Okay, we're moving on to item 7, policy matters. And I want to turn this over to our executive director. Any issues that need to be presented to the board?
No, we are still kind of in our holding pattern on this one and set for oral arguments June 30th. So,
great.
Circle back on that eventually.
Okay, director's report.
Director's report. It's the best part of the meeting, right?
Item 8.
I'll cheer at the same time.
Juicy stuff.
Okay, so we have our budget, which I know everybody's fascinated to look at. I am grateful I don't work for the Board of Accountancy, though, because I would be worried that people will be scrutinizing more. And I will just say that I met with our Central Services Bureau last week, the accountants, and we go over many numbers and within the budget and make sure that we're on task, particularly this year, because we have had so many unexpected expenses come up that we didn't even know were on the horizon when we submitted the last fiscal budget. You know, the boardroom and everything, that's the construction and all that. But we're doing all right. And so the reports that I share with you, the summary reports, don't show the projected costs or expenses that are coming out, but we look at those as well to make sure, you know, projecting everything that we know is going to hit the budget, that we'll still be okay. So we're still okay, which is the bottom line on that. Very important. Digitization. So we still haven't received our final invoice on that. I think you reached out again, didn't you, Kurt?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a response, and I still have some microfiche that they need to get scanned for us that we're just doing our own little audit, and there were some missing, so we just asked them to come back, and they did pick it up a couple weeks ago.
Because the bulk of everything was done, and then we had duplicates on some of the microfiche.
And so in our office, we had basically microfiche in two spots, main set and then the duplicate set. And so what they took did not include a lot of the duplicates, so they had to come back and basically take everything else out. And that they're going through hand. They did a basically an audit of what they have already scanned compared to what they got from us, and now they're pulling those by hand and getting them scanned.
So it's been kind of a cleanup project as well, which is great.
Yeah.
And we've surplused over 40 file cabinets. When you guys finally get the chance to come look at the suite, you just won't recognize it when the dust settles and everything's finished. But it's amazing. It feels bigger to me just not having all those file cabinets in there.
I've had an opportunity to take a look at some of those scans online.
Oh, the minutes?
Yeah, the minutes in that, and really nice.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's another board. I don't know for sure, but I really don't know of any other 9010 regulatory board that has all of the minutes posted on their website for public viewing back to the origin of the board for 100 years. I mean, that to me, I still get excited every time I say that. I just think it's impressive. So, thank you, Kurt, because really, Kurt facilitated that.
Oh. Right, yeah. Kurt, good job.
Amazing.
Yeah, the thing I was looking at was in the 80s, it was object character recognition, and it was really good.
Oh, yeah, we tried to make sure all documents that's being digitized is readable. You can just control it no matter what CDF it is.
Great, great research material.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
As far as our online transition, we're still working on that. That's something that we had asked for in the fiscal budget that will start on July 1st, which at this point, you may or may not be aware that the governor's office, you know, he hasn't approved the budget yet. Last year, he approved it on the last day to approve it, on June 30th. So, assuming we will have funding for that, but it's been a little bit tricky these last couple of weeks. Kurt and I are dancing around the vendor and asset and the state procurement office and getting different answers from different people. And I think it was just this morning we finally got a definitive answer from state procurement. Because I said, I don't want to sign the contract. They're saying, you need to sign this contract so we can get things in motion. And I said, I don't have the funding in place. The funding hasn't been approved. I'm not going to sign this contract as much as I'd like to. And procurement said, yeah, no, don't sign the contract without the funding being set. So whatever that looks like, I don't know. I'm sure they'll, I mean, the vendor, obviously, they want our business. They're looking forward to that. So as much as we're looking forward to to the online process, so I'm sure we'll work something out. But it's just been a little bit of a fun time there. In addition, Kurt and I came up with like two, the vendor sent us a scope of work, and we came up with like two pages of questions that we sent back to them, and we've gone back and forth a little bit.
Judith and I have both been through the ringer with going on online systems in our past, so we're trying to be as careful as we can with this.
Very careful, thinking of any possible glitch. I'm sure no matter how much experience you have, there's probably some new thing that you didn't think could possibly be an issue, but you know, at least we both have experience, not good experiences, with other online vendors, that's a real benefit to building a system. So
this system is going to do registrations, everything will basically be
everything.
If you don't want to send, like, do people still have the opportunity to send in paper things?
Hopefully
or is
not.
It just, okay.
I mean, I would remove the paper applications from the website. So unless somebody is 85 years old and, you know, living on Mars with no access to the internet, I don't know. Everything will be scanned, uploaded, automatic reminders, so more reminders.
That sounds really good.
It will be a portal system where everybody, you have your login, you log into the system. Right?
Another password. Okay.
Everything will be good.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And most agencies in this state already have moved that direction. So we are, it's going to be great. Towards the end of next fiscal, it should be completed and go live.
Yeah, the estimated this time of next year, we should be live.
That includes renewals too.
Yes.
I mean, renewals, applications,
yes.
Everything.
All of it.
Good. Okay.
There'll be no excuse to get your renewals done.
That's right.
The paperwork.
You can do it 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So is it also going to include artificial intelligence in case you have a question, you get an answer right away?
No, because our staff is so amazing. We answer quickly.
I think that's an option.
Are you serious?
Maybe we'll do
frequently asked questions.
Those are
we can do that. I think we have that already on our website.
So is it going to take it? I know there's like for people trying to get, you know, confirmation from Arizona, you know, from this board that yes, you're in good standing, and then they can send it to a different state board and all that other stuff. That's
verifications.
That's all going to be built in there.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and then at some point, you know, in speaking with NCARB and CWS, CLARB, I'm not sure when ASVAG could join with that too, but at some point, if we could have the API transfer, what's that called, the electronic handshake, basically, between their systems to transfer information and make it even easier for applicants. So if somebody starts with NCARB and they have a council record, that it could speak to our system and they wouldn't have to supply any duplicate information that they've already, or vice versa, if they start with us, and then it could, you know, transfer to NCARB or
Well, Carvel still want to charge that. That's how they make their money, so you'll still get that.
But it would, but even if they charge, it would still, in theory, make it easier for the person, right, to supply. So Julie's laughing. Because sometimes, like, just this week, I forwarded Julie an email and was asking about an applicant because they said they had submitted whatever to NCARB and what's going on, but they didn't realize they needed to submit LMI with us. To apply with our board specifically. So anyway, I'm sure that will be an enhancement and another fiscal ask because it would be an addition to the system. But I don't even know. The associations have spoken about it. They've talked about it and, you know, they would like it as well, but I don't know really that any of them are actually, that it's functional anywhere yet. So it's in the works.
Okay. I should say that our experience, the word enhancement's a bad word.
Right. It means a lot of money. It's an enhancement to your system. Board staff, well, I'm going to quote Julie on this. She said last week, I think somebody installed a revolving door in our sweet. So we did gain a new Melissa Condi, a new customer service rep, and Cassandra Armenta to licensing. And then since I wrote this, even we had another licensing specialist put in her notice for all happy reasons, great opportunities in another state, you know. So we have three vacancies right now that we're interviewing. Okay. And so here's the best part of this whole section. Board composition. We all adored and appreciate Steve Noel. He was asking me every month, what's going on, Judith? Is there anybody going to replace me? And finally, Bill Nesgood joined us. Bill, can you just tell us a little, give everybody a little bit of background on you?
Okay. I originally from New Jersey, as you could tell. Can't lose that, no matter how many years you get out of the city. But I graduated from New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology in 74. The oil industry grabbed me by the neck. My first job was Lafayette, Louisiana, drilling offshore. Then I didn't want to be offshore anymore, so I went to Midland, Texas, and at that time, the Austin Chalk trend in San Antonio, south of San Antonio, took off. So we were doing 7-day wonder holes, 8,700 feet to 9,200 feet in the Austin Chalk trend. Fracking wasn't we didn't have that technology back then. So you had to find the fractures actually in the chalk. And then lo and behold, Exxon called me out of New Orleans. I went for an interview and asked me to go to Kuala Lumpur or the North Sea, and I just, you know, I was 25 years old. I was like, nah, I'm not that interested. So 2 weeks later, they sent me a letter, and they had a job for me in New Orleans, and drilled wells in the Gulf of Alaska, offshore Texas and Louisiana, and I drilled the first well in the Baltimore Canyon, offshore Atlantic City, on the Glomar Pacific, which was a dynamic positioning drill ship. After New Orleans, I got a job offer in Dallas, went to work in Dallas, and I was with a company called Buttes Resources for a year. They were out of California, and a guy came and asked me to go to lunch, and he went to start an oil company, and he wanted to make me vice president, so I took it. I mean, young enough to do that, so we did real well. I discovered a field in East Texas, 21 wells, gas wells and stuff like that, and then unfortunately in 85, oil went from $22 a barrel to about $9 a barrel. Natural gas went from $2.20 an MCF to about $1.10. The banks called the loans in and we all collapsed. I went to Houston and I did some consulting for a while, but the oil industry was dying business. And so the Maryland Department of the Environment put an ad in the paper in Dallas and said, if you pay for yourself to come up here, we'll give you a job and stuff. I went there, they wrapped their arms around me and I moved up there, which was probably the best thing I could do. We were funded by the EPA, so I did probably the worst, you know, sites you could do. The national priority listing is what I did, and so these were really bad sites that had affected people, blue baby syndrome and stuff like that, which is really sad to see what, you know, drinking contaminated water can do and stuff like that. So then I'm from New Jersey. I don't want to live in that kind of environment anymore. It's a rat race back there. I mean, you know, you try to go to a wet restaurant down the street and you'll have two blocks will be around the corner waiting to get in there. So there was a buddy of mine lived down here and sent me a paper, and WRA had an ad in the paper for a project manager, and I sent it in. Lo and behold, Steve Noel was the president of WRA. So he sent Ed Ritchie up, who was from Pennsylvania, he was the vice president, to meet with me and my wife at a outlet mall up there, and I met with them, and 2 weeks later I got a letter, and I came back here. Or I came here and worked at WRA for, I don't know how many, 4 or 5 years, until somebody came. They tried to buy WRA out, and they did, and they ruined the company. Otherwise, WRA was a great company. They did the Indian Bend Wash. They got a plaque for doing that and all that. They're a great company. And we all split apart and everything. I worked for some other companies, and then I started my own company, International Environmental Solutions. I was doing bioremediation in shrimp and fish ponds, and also petroleum contaminated soil. I went to everywhere from China to Taiwan to Thailand, and even Boeing sent me to the Netherlands to look at some soil there to remediate. But unfortunately, we had to join with another company, and about a month later, the company was indicted from giving kickbacks over there. So we couldn't do it anymore. So anyway, so been doing that, and I now work for Atlas, who used to be ATC. We were bought by Atlas. They're a fairly large geotechnical environmental firm. They're all across the country, and so I'm now I'm a contractor for the state. I've been here 3 years, and it's for the underground storage tanks, so cleaning up all the gas stations and stuff like that. So,
with ADEQ, right?
With ADEQ, but I'm still an employee of Atlas.
Right.
So they have a contract, and every 6 months the contract's renewed. I was only supposed to be here 6 months, but now they won't let me go, and so.
So it doesn't sound like you have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Weren't you doing a little bit of work on mines?
No mining.
No mining?
No,
okay.
I haven't done any mining at all. So.
And Steve's specialist was, forgive me, I'm going to say it wrong, hydrologist?
Groundwater, yeah.
Right? Is that
Steve
hydrologist?
Graduated from Notre Dame, and he was a hydrologist, like our friend Jeff Hulsmeister, who that's surface water, so we're more groundwater. So anyway.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Super happy to have you here.
Judith, I didn't finish the story, so Judith, we come in about the same time in the morning, about 7:00. A little before 7:00, Judith beats me there. And so, anyway, one day, I don't even know who she is, and one day she's in her SUV, and she's got donuts and cookies and bags, and I'm like, and she's trying to carry them. I'm like, please, so I bring it upstairs, and on the way, she's like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm upstairs at the UST, and are you a geologist? Yeah, and she's like, are you registered?
Yeah,
after that, I got pulled by the neck into the room. She never let me go. So. And then when she says Steve Noel, I mean, what a small world. I mean, that's hard to believe.
It was
just
amazing. And Steve was so excited to hear that, you know, I had met Bill. And I felt like it was kismet. So.
Yeah, Steve's son had actually come. He was actually a contractor when I was here. And Steve called me up and he said, because his son's not a geologist or an engineer, and he said, Bill, could you help him out? And sure, I could. Steve, you helped me out. You know, you brought me down here and stuff like that. So I think his son is selling Elaine pumps or something like that, or groundwater pumps or something like that, or well pumps, something like that. But yeah, his son is as nice as his father is. So, I mean, that worked out real well.
Must be a nice guy. He's as nice as his dad.
So you were delivering donuts to who?
Not to this person. Put that in notes. Put that
in notes.
Make
better
record. Holding out a record. Donuts, so you're right.
Usually I bring in cases of Diet Coke when it helps me. So we have our licensing numbers for you at your fingertips, enforcement numbers, 62 open cases. Doug's keeping things in check on that. Anything you want to add to any of that, Julie or Doug? You good?
Is that trending one way or another, like the cases? Is there a trend to maybe increasing, or are we staying on at a good pace, or?
Always an ebb and flow to cases.
Yeah. Okay.
For whatever reason. We're seeing an uptick right at the moment. It's not reflecting these numbers because there are complaints that haven't been opened up yet.
Okay.
You could do like a 5-year average. That would be interesting. That sounds like a great project for Hayden.
All right. Can't wait to see it.
How are we tracking
this?
Yeah. How many ways can we show statistics? A lot. The association report. So ASBOG, last month we talked about their switching to ProMetric. I mean, it's very exciting because ASBOG is going online, or they've gone online. Now it's official. So instead of all the in-person testing and proctoring that was taking place all over, now they can go to any of the ProMetric testing facilities. And I asked Julie how that's going. She gave me a thumbs up so far.
It'll start March 2023, so this will be our last year proctoring the exam in October.
Oh, we've got one more in October?
Just one more. It'll be nice.
But I thought we started uploading people into that system, though.
Not yet?
Not yet. Oh,
I think we have one more meeting in the fall to train us on that.
Just got overly excited about that. Well, we'll give you an update later on. Clarb, Jack and I spoke. I don't think there's anything new we have to report on right now. They're gearing up for their annual meeting. It'll be in September. Thankfully, not the same months as all the other meetings. I'm glad the association's spread out just a little bit.
Yep.
NCARB, some exciting things happening, a lot of exciting things happening there. Julie and I have sat through some webinars talking about their transition. Let's see, they're going from ProMetric that ASBOG just is starting to switching to PSI. And their switch takes place May 31st. So their final reminder sent out to all candidates will go out this Thursday. They feel like it's going to be a benefit to the candidates. There's going to be a 13-day window during that switch where there's no testing for anyone during that time. So any candidate expiring in that window will have a rolling clock extension, and the actual PSI testing will begin June 14th for anybody. Does that sound right, Julie? And June 10th, everything will be live online for candidates to access. So, and then I thought, I was really excited also to hear that NCARB was saying they know how expensive third-party test prep is, and so they have developed, in their words, a very robust practice questions to put on their website for candidates to be able to practice to take the ARE.
That's been years
in the making, so thank goodness. There's no cost for the candidates, and they can take the practice exam in test mode or practice mode. And practice mode allows them to know immediately if it's correct or incorrect, and gives them additional information too. And the dashboard for their account will store all of their practice exam information, so the candidate can go back and reference that. So that's really nice. The ARE test, the content of the test is not changing at this time. the times, the number of questions, everything will stay the same, and none of those changes affect any of our board processes. Important to know. And then Mike and I are looking forward to attending the annual NCARB conference.
Next week.
Next week.
Right.
A lot going on.
bring your cowboy boots. Boots in Texas. It's in Austin.
Cowboy boots. It's in Austin.
Nice town.
Yeah. Good place to use it.
We're going to take the evening of Congress Avenue back.
Yes.
Review. So they have a
bat cave or bat bridge.
A bat cave. All,
yeah, not bat caves. Sorry.
Batman's there, right? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be interesting. NCWS, thankfully Kurt last week went and attended the Western Zone interim meeting for NCWS. So
take it away, Kurt. For those who don't know, a zone meeting is basically kind of just a follow or a setup for the annual meeting. It gets the certain states from a specific region to sit down. These are the motions. This is what's going to be discussed at the annual to let you know what to plan to vote on. There were some interesting things going on there that just to say first, the venue was amazing. I'd never been to Lake Tahoe, and it was just, I loved it. I love that venue a lot. So I appreciate Nevada choosing that. When a zone meeting comes up, they go alphabetically per state in that zone to host. So currently, we just got through Nevada, and then Nevada had chosen that over, like, say, Las Vegas. And so we appreciate that. And then we can look forward to hosting at some point in the future, too, when they come back around in the alphabet. But at that meeting, Dr. Alejandro Angel, prior board member, if you guys may be well aware of him, he accepted an award for the 10 years he had served on our board, as well as other things that he's done and the time he spent at NC's. So he was there with his family, which is really cool, because I didn't expect to see anybody from Arizona there, so it was really nice to meet him and his family. And some of the things that they were going to motion on at the annual meeting, most of it's changing their bylaws, things like that they don't really generally affect this board. But one of the big things that they're looking at is splitting up the professional surveyor exam into four or five modules. And it was going back and forth amongst the states if that's a good idea or a bad idea. They're showing that each exam would be roughly like $300 each module, which would obviously up the price considerably. And as I don't know if you guys are aware, but land surveyors, it's actually, there's not that many coming in, the newbies. The average age of a land surveyor, I think, is
61.
So,
like over 40% nationally of all land surveyors.
It could be seen as an impediment that NCs is saying, well, each state can just choose which modules it requires them to complete for licensure. If that went through, then we would need to change our rules in order to encompass that if modules did go through. So that'll be a big thing for you guys to be looking at in August in Carlsbad, the annual, to vote on that. I had sat down at the MBA forum, which is just the regulator forum at the conference. Some interesting ideas that were going around. David Cox, the CEO of NCs, was there and talked to us. He was talking about NCs going into an API handshake with information, which would be really beneficial to us. They don't have that quite yet, but they were working towards that for the future. He was telling me that, or telling us in Kentucky, that unlike, you know, right now here in Arizona, if you want to sit for one of their exams and you don't get auto-approved, which means an ABIT accredited degree and other things, that you have to do an application with us to sit for the exam. In Kentucky, they did away with that, where basically you have to go through NCs to sit, and then they don't have applications for that anymore. And you can tell that's kind of the push they're trying to do to get other states to, you know, they are the exams and we are the registration. Whether or not states will follow that, I don't know. I thought that was an interesting idea.
I mean, yeah, they've talked to us before about wanting us to change our role.
Yeah. They voted for just the new VP for Zone. And I don't know if it's of interest to anybody, but Dr. Q was appointed VP. And Elizabeth Johnson's the new assistant VP. He's Californian and she's Alaska. And then there also, another thing I thought was interesting is having the FE be considered the same equivalent as a GRE and pushing that to universities for acceptance into master programs.
Wow.
So I thought that was interesting.
That is very interesting.
Any questions?
Did they, I sat in on the May State of the Council for NCES, and they talked about some of the items that need to be voted on in August. Did they provide the final list of things that will be voted on in August? Or
I don't have that yet. They said they would provide it.
Okay.
There was a lot of motions. I want to say at least 40 motions or something like that.
Oh, wow, they went more. Okay, they didn't have nearly that many in the May update there, so that'd be good because a lot of those will need to be on. We need to get them in time to put them on the board so we can, as a board, have one solid voice when we go.
I understand it should be in June, and if once we receive that, that would be put in our board packet to see all those.
Good.
That does remind me that we did accept the motion to push forward language that New Mexico had put forward. So instead of a New Mexico vote going to annual, it's now a zone motion to go to annual regarding adding language about reciprocity. If you've been registered in state for 10 years, no disciplinary action, no background issues, you would be reciprocation of licensure in another state.
Which, so, you know, even if you vote on that and it becomes NCWS model law, it still doesn't
help us.
I mean, it could ultimately help us if we choose to look at that and incorporate it, but it doesn't trump our laws and rules. As a reminder.
Right. I had voted yay for that simply for the discussion to occur at the annual meeting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great. Anything else?
Any other questions?
Thank you, Kurt. Yep, and that annual meeting is August 23rd through 26th in Carlsbad. So, and I think that for me, that's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have a meeting next month on the 28th. Any topics for discussion? A few. Drones?
Well, we need to do some research. That was has to be agendized in the future.
Okay.
Drone mapping. We need to do some research so we can have a good discussion.
Research involving what other states are doing?
Yeah, what other states are doing, who's changed some legislation, maybe. See what's going on so we could talk about what you guys might want to consider.
And I've got just a question, and this maybe is not an agenda item, but the clarification of construction staking that we were dealing with Mr. Elliott on this morning. So when is construction staking, surveying, when is it not?
Would you like that to go to the Laws and Rules Committee?
Yeah, that would be something that either, if there's ambiguity in the statute, could go for a potential statutory update, or otherwise, really, it's a matter of, as cases come up before the board, looking at the unique circumstances of a case and determining whether or not it falls within one definition or the other. But to the degree there's ambiguity, the board certainly could look at a statutory update to address it.
Construction staking is really with civil engineering.
So
part of the clarification, you'd have to look at engineering, civil engineering, and see about the construction staking, because that's where it starts from.
Talking about us using transits and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty bad. If they're out there with a tape measure, it's not necessarily a profession. If they're up there setting up a total station or transit or whatever, now it's starting to become surveying.
Sure.
Well, that would be an interesting clarification then on when.
Yeah.
But
we're kind of moving beyond a future agenda. I mean, we can certainly make it a future agenda item. We can't necessarily get into a full board discussion of it today.
Right.
But certainly if there's...
Do you want it to be agendized for a
I do, because I think it's subjective right now.
Okay.
The drone is another one, too. I could see in California that they would nail it because you got to have a license for photogrammetry. So So I could see where they could probably tackle it there. Someone's doing aerial and it's, you know, contours and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, anybody can go out and buy this equipment just about, and that makes it real difficult.
So we'll add that on a future agenda, give staff some time to research that. Great. Anything else, board members?
I guess just doesn't sound like we'll probably have the NCES thing to vote on for the next agenda, so it'll be the one after that then.
Unless it might have it by the June meeting. It's pretty late. June 28th.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, okay.
I think they made it out. We'll get it.
Yeah,
okay. All right.
Well, then. Did they describe the modules for the survey? You know, the breakdown of the modules, what they were supposed to represent?
They did. I can't remember it right off the top of my head. The motion is either for a 4-module or a 5-module. I think there's a basic course, PLLS. I can't remember the other ones, I apologize, but it was definitely...
They'll probably come in that material.
Certainly
they're going to vote
will.
On it, so we'll have it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you'll see that breakdown in when we get that information.
Okay.
$300 a module.
Okay, nothing else. Let's adjourn. Thanks, guys.
Good check.
I guess.
Oh, the fastest one so far.
Yeah. Hit that so hard to turn the lights on back there.
Yeah.
Wow, we're improving. This is.